accession number 20590, reel 7.
Norman Mitchell, reel 7. So, right, displaced persons we talk about in Hamburg.
And Lübeck, yeah.
Lübeck,
yeah.
So, I mean, a lot of people were very anti the DPs, weren't they, and stuff? You know, I've heard tales where they seem to be quite disliked, really.
What do you mean by us? No, I don't think they were disliked. And they weren't quite our cup of tea, but I think one took the view, it depends on your own attitude to them. I took the view that they were very unfortunate. And when we were going through Germany prior to the end of the war, and you were going through these places, seeing these people come out, I mean, the state they were in, you know, and they'd salute you all the way, you know, and you knew darn well for the look of them, they'd never make it home. And I think one felt sorry for them. Well, that's me. I don't think I'm anywhere a racist, but they were damned annoying at times with the things they get up to and all this business of kein Geld bekommen. That was their favourite. No money coming. Oh, kein Geld bekommen. He used to say that was it, because what they thought was that we were pocketing it. Dear, there we are.
So, what about the civilian population of Lübeck? I mean,
they weren't bad, actually. The people we had a lot of trouble with, civilians, were in when we were in Solingen, and Hilden. They would come and work for us, but they knew their rights.
Right.
Yeah.
What were their rights?
Typical German. They were entitled to one slice of bread and one bowl of soup per day, and it had to be up to the level in the bowl. Things like that. That was interpreters we used to use, you know,
So, I mean...
But you put them in charge. I mean, we had one in early days in Hamburg. One of them there, we used to go out because, I mean, there was curfew. 8 o'clock. And, oh, I forget the guy's name now. Oh, boy used to come out with it, speak perfect English. Yeah. Anybody on the street, he'd chew their ears off. In German, obviously. It's so amusing. Then we had one in... another one in Solingen, Erling Ernst, who was very good English. He was the same. Give him a bit of authority. No, you know, we were allegedly the enemy, or had been quite recently. Yeah. We were boss. We were the boss. And by FD, put them in their place. Yeah.
Were any of the German civilian population resentful?
Oh, I think they were, but not in a blatant sort of way. They did resent you being there. I'm a lot, in actual fact, let's be honest. We're quite happy to see us there. And I can say, quite honestly, there's a lot of... My other colleagues would tell you, we didn't meet a single Nazi the whole time through. Not that we'd admit it. No. And we met some very nice families out there, yeah.
Fraternisation was something that was banned, wasn't it?
Yeah, for a while, that's right, yeah. And then it was dropped. No way you could do that. I mean, we aren't like that. We like to chat to people. I mean, even though we've had our lives mucked about by them, messed around by them, I mean, you couldn't switch off completely.
Did you feel as though you were a part of an occupying force, or were you administering?
Well, I wasn't. Once I got the head of the office, I mean, that was it. I wasn't one of them. I was one of I only wrote the orders and gave them. I didn't carry them out, you know. It was one of those things, you know.
So from Lübeck, you went back to...
From Lübeck, I was then demobbed, yes. Right. Yeah.
We'll just slip back chronologically to October 44.
Yeah, that was around about the 18th of October. We were given the job of liberating the city of Sertogenbosch. And it's one of the first jobs that the division was given to do on its own. Right, as a complete unit.
Right.
Prior to that, a lot of it had been what they call brigade actions and so on, but that's the first time that the division had been given a set job. We had supporting arms, mind, the tanks and so on and so forth. But Robbie Ross was the divisional commander, Irishman, in charge of the Welsh division, yeah. And
what did you know about what you were going to do before you actually started?
We knew what the operation was, we knew what was happening. Mm. Absolutely, as I say, that's one great thing about the army. I think it was, from what I can gather, it was under Montgomery's aegis that everybody knew exactly what was going to happen, and if this didn't come off, what the contingencies were, because Den Bosch was not the straightforward liberation that it was expected. It didn't go right.
So how did you expect to liberate it?
Well, we expected to go straight in, slam, bang, wallop, and that's the end of that. But what one didn't realise was that the maps of the area were not as comprehensive as they could have been. And I think the divisional commander, Robbie Ross, said, well, if I'd have known the situation there, I wouldn't have attacked it that way at all.
Right. No. What did you do?
Too much water.
Yeah. So what did you do in
this? Not a lot. Not a lot. It was mainly infantry, tanks. The only time we were come in to help out was when there was a bit of sniping going on right in the middle of the town. There was a factory there, De Wouters, which the Germans had put all the civilians in the cellar, and they were in the top sniping at the infantry. So with the tanks, I don't know what the tanks were doing. They weren't about, so they brought up a few armoured cars, and that sorted the whole thing out. And we've been heroes in Den Bosch ever since.
So how long did it take?
About 6-7 days. Cost a lot of casualties, yeah.
Did it?
Oh, yeah. And yet the one remarkable thing, they have a fantastic Roman Catholic cathedral there at Den Bosch, and it only suffered one tiny bit of damage. Mm. One 25-pounder shell apparently knocked a bit of masonry off at the bottom. Mm. Apart from that, it's completely intact. Mm. It's a wonderful cathedral. Mm. Yeah.
So you went into
in Den Bosch, yeah, afterwards, yeah, yeah. And we've been going back there ever since.
Mm. So don't tell me about it now, because we must stick to the Second World War.
Yeah, okay. Well, that was it. The city was liberated, and that was it. Mm. And boy, were they pleased.
Yeah.
The Dutch, remarkable. Mm. Wonderful people.
Mm. Right, so... you'd had some contact with the military police, haven't you?
Just a little.
Yeah. What was the general opinion of them?
Not very salubrious. Generally speaking, you see, they were very officious. Generally speaking. Mm. And so they were avoided. They were avoided like the plague, yeah.
Did you ever have any contact with them?
Only at that situation at Grosbeek in outside of Nijmegen. That's the only time I've ever fallen foul, but it's the only time I've ever had anything to do with them at all, actually. Mm. Yeah.
What about conscientious objectors? You must have known some, perhaps in England.
Yes, I knew one or two, and... I can accept that some people couldn't do what we did.
Mm. By conscience, innately.
Yeah.
Didn't believe
that it was the right thing to do. Yeah. My mother's next door neighbour in Bristol, he couldn't. I mean, he was a professional man. No way he could. Mm. He couldn't even think about it. Mm. And
On principle,
he couldn't do it. Yeah. I think there's a bit of fear involved as well, but I think it was purely simply principle, that was it. But apart from that, I don't think I met. He was about the only one that I actually knew.
What about profiteers and black marketeers? I mean, you were aware of them?
Well, we were aware of them, but who were they? I didn't know.
That must be going on in Germany as well, wasn't it?
Oh, well, the black market in Germany. I mean, let's be frank. I mean, we... I think some of the Brits were the biggest culprits. I mean, coffee and cigarettes were at a premium.
Did you ever manage to sell any?
Yeah. Oh, I made no bones about it. I don't think I was the only one.
Selling them to
not in quantity, specials. But if ever I came on leave, I'd always bring some back. Cigarettes. I mean, I've never smoked. I've never smoked, despite the 5 years in there. The one thing they didn't teach me is how to smoke. And I was put off mainly because old Jerry Pritchard, my car commander, used to smoke these Turkish Balkan Sobrani. I don't, you know them, and you smoke them inside an armoured car, puts you off smoking for life, I'll tell you. And so I've never smoked.
Yeah.
So the free issue we used to get every day was very welcome to my particular fellows at Smokeman. So I was very popular. And with my duty frees as well, we shared between them.
What about the, you mentioned the Americans, but the other Allied troops that you came across, did you have opinions about the different nationalities?
Well, didn't meet any.
Right. So you had no impression at all.
The only foreigners we had came and joined us. Occasionally we got we had a Norwegian officer, Lieutenant Eriksson, came to us. He was a great character. And one or two Dutch people joined us latterly as interpreters. But I mean, the Polish Armoured Division, which we literally had something to do with in Normandy. I mean, frankly, they were as mad as March hares. They were eventually taken out, I think, of the main, and put on one of the Channel ports to look after that. They really were mad. You could never keep control over as to where they were, what they were doing. You know, they were so keen to get it. So keen to get it, the Germans. Nothing could stop them. Lordy.
I mean, obviously your squadron suffered casualties. I mean, did you lose any close friends?
Oh, yeah. Out of the squadron, I think the whole squadron, right from from beginning to end, we lost 33 killed. I think it was 70-odd wounded and 4 missing that we never found. Oh, I mean, there were people in my squadron and my troop. One, old Bill Pope, got killed up at Enschede in northeast Holland. I mean, damn me, wasn't he? His armoured car was on the crossroads and I was up here. Got a bazooka right through the front. And he was buried, we buried him in the local churchyard temporarily. And then the war graves commission came out and removed him to the civilian cemetery in Enschede, in the town of Enschede. And I was very pleased to think that in 1995 I was able to visit his grave. That was something.
Were you very affected by his death at the time?
I don't think we were. One was aware of it. But it's one of those things, I don't say you can get used to it, but you don't react to it quite. I mean, the actual burial is quite a moving situation, yeah. But apart from that, I mean, old Bill's only 19, yeah. Mm. Young one.
No time to.
Not really, you've got to get on with it, you see. And this, I think, is where a lot of these battle exhaustion cases have, is a result of that. They literally. Now, some of us weren't affected that way, and they are.
Mm. I mean, you've mentioned lots of names of officers and NCOs.
Yeah.
Any you haven't mentioned that you stick in your memory? Tales about them?
Was old Rollo Payne, captain, in this Friday the 13th job. It was a good old job, old Rollo was there. He's second in command. He's Lieutenant General, retired now. And, yes, he's a great character. Frank Long, I always thought a lot of. Not because he was Bristolian, but he was a great guy. Mm. And he put me in jeopardy. Am I allowed to say this? But putting me in jeopardy when I was home on leave in Bristol. And I was in with Mother, sat down, and the knock on the front door, and Mother went out. She came back and she said, there's a lady at the front door asking for you. I said, oh, lady? Yes. Yeah, she's got a baby in a pram. Hey? I said, who is she? Oh, she wouldn't say who she was. Who the devil's this? So I go out. And I said, oh, hello. Can I help her? She said, I'm Frank Long's wife. I said, I said, yes, I'm Frank. I'm Frank's wife, she said. You know, Frank, in your troop over in Germany. I said, Frank, I said, you mean Mr. Long? Oh, no, she said, he's Frank to me. Oh, come on in. So she said, he's been in touch and said that you'll be over here, and he wants to know if you'll take this parcel back for him. It's his SD, service address, and his Sam Brown and everything. Yeah. Sorry to last me for life. Yeah, mother came in. Shocked, yes, yeah. The lady at the door, I tell you, she's got a baby in a pram. Yeah.
What about the RAMC? I mean, you must have seen...
The medics. Mm. Well, we had our medical officer was Nobby Clark. Mm-hmm. One of the most eccentric people I've ever met. He, like David or Goldsmith, stuttered. And he had a pipe. Always smoked a pipe. In surgery and that sort of thing. And he always dribbled down it. Oh, God, dear. Dear. Yeah. You're not his dead.
It's
encouraging,
you know.
Magic,
is it really?
Let me see what's wrong. It'll take a fortnight to diagnose, you know, if anything was really...
dear. So would you have RAMC near you in the field?
You get field ambulances and field hospitals was there to come up and collect, wounded people, yeah.
What did you think of them? Because quite a lot of them were COs, weren't they?
Oh, they were great. Yeah.
You must have seen them pick up wounded.
Yeah, many times, yeah. They're brilliant. Mm. Absolutely brilliant, yeah.
What was it about the way they did it?
No fear. They didn't seem to be frightened. Mm-hmm. Whether they thought the Red Cross protected them, I don't know. That was always my thought.
Yeah.
But no, they did a marvellous job. Yeah. Oh. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, VE Day you celebrated, didn't you?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We had a few beers. Some spirit, yes.
Oh. I mean, the war went on against Japan then, didn't it?
Mm, yeah.
And did you... Were you following that closely?
We were Far East 1 designated. We were in the first out there, yeah.
Right.
Experience. We come through that lot. We're still there. Mm. Yeah, Far East 1.
Mm-hmm. So were you following
my sergeant, Jerry Bridger, my troop sergeant, he was on his way. Woof, yeah, straight out.
Yeah.
I think he only got halfway. What happened to them, I never heard. And of course, I didn't go because the bombs were dropped, and that was it.
Yeah. So you heard about the bombs being dropped.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. What did you think about it?
I have mixed feelings about it.
At the time.
And I still have it. Yeah, mixed feelings at the time, and still have mixed feelings about it now. It saved me. Okay, it saved me going out east, for which I was eternally grateful. But to cause mass destruction like that, I don't know that I could. Quite equate with it. Very odd opinion I have on that, yeah.
When you heard the bombs being dropped, I mean, you knew
they'd
that
been
would
dropped,
be
yeah.
the end of
We knew that would be the end of the... Yeah, we knew that we shouldn't have to move. And I must admit, certain celebrations were held. So thank the Lord we don't have to go out there.
Yeah. So VJ Day, more celebrations?
We don't worry too much about them, quite honestly. That was in what, September, wasn't it?
Or was it August?
August? I can't remember.
So, from where were we? Lübeck, weren't we?
That's where I finished up, Lübeck, yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So, how were you actually demobbed?
From Lübeck, yeah. I made up, I've still got me a demob book upstairs. Mm. I made that out myself. that was my main job in the
you
office.
Got that right.
I got that right, everything right, and I also got all the officers into the office because there was about a dozen of us. And then you sit the officers around on chairs and you give them a demob book. Say, I write a reference. And whatever he thought of, he wrote.
Right. So, what sort of reference did you get?
A very good one. Well, they gave it back to me, and I could read it immediately. See,
so
smart NCO, yeah. Who has good control over his men. was trained as a driver mechanic and has worked well as a clerk. Now, that, what more can you ask? Lovely.
So what sort of literally happened from when you got your DeMod book in your office?
Well, then it was arranged then for us to be driven from Lübeck down to the Hoek of Holland. Mm-hmm. I then boarded a ferry at the Hoek of Holland and came across to Harwich. Harwich, Harrison Paulstone. From there, we went to York, mm-hmm. and were demobbed.
What was the actual demob like?
Well, we stayed overnight in this barracks place or something, and then the following day we went down, and there was a corporal in the guard from one of the guards regiments, regular, who said to us, "Look, chaps, I've got your books here. I'll call out each of them, so we should know who's here and who's not." Now, my apologies, it hasn't got your rank on here. So, I was only calling out just your surnames. I apologise, but that's the only records I have, just your names. Yeah. And one sergeant played holy hell with him. Yeah. "I'm not out yet," he said. "I'm sergeant, and you'll address me as such." "I'm sorry, now you've told me, I'll address you as sergeant." Yeah. Mate. Right to the end, yeah. And then, having collected all the gear and... well, you know, we got on the train and went back to Bristol.
Nice demob suit?
No. Chalk stripe.
I think they've all gone now. You don't see them. You used to see them on old men sometimes, didn't you? But I think they have all gone now.
I didn't. And I didn't keep it as a souvenir. Yeah.
So, I mean, what were your feelings as you went back on the train to Bristol?
Well, I got married, you see, in 1946. I was still in uniform then. And
before you were demobbed?
Yes, we married on the 25th of May, 46. So we're coming up to 55 next year. Yes, we were married, and I went back. We lived with my mother for a while. I managed to get myself a job fairly quickly as assistant transport manager to a coal merchant in the Bristol, which I did for 3 years, I suppose.
Pensions or payments, it says here.
Pensions of what?
All payments.
Of?
Did you get the army?
No. If I was German, I would. That's nasty, isn't it? They get paid. No, it's no more than you ought to have done. Yeah.
You got some money in your hand, did you, as you were doing?
I had the princely sum of £85. Uh-huh. I should never forget it.
Quite a lot of money.
But the big laugh to me was, it wasn't given to me in one sum. It was put into two separate post office savings bank accounts so that I shouldn't spend it all at once. Have you ever been ridiculous? That was what this country thought of our ability. Oh dear. That did.
So did they ask you to stay on as a regular?
Yes. Yeah. I was offered promotion, all sorts of things, and to take these hours, but no.
Why not?
Not my life. I like to make my own decisions.
You weren't really tempted.
I should have made it. I think if I'd have been commissioned, I could have carried it. But when it didn't come, I wouldn't bother it. And after that, I said, "Well, you know, not stay."
So, did you have to? You became a reservist, did you?
Z reserve, yes.
Yeah.
Yep.
So ever get called?
Yes.
I
honestly can't remember the year, but I had to go up to Setford in Norfolk. I was called up. And there's me, having been in armoured cars, and then with the 10th Hussars with the tank regiment, I was called back to an anti-tank battery. Dear. That was the way the army worked, you see. Dear. And I spent a fortnight up there driving some very enthusiastic territorial army captain. I met up with one of the lads from the recce, old Ernie Prothero. Met up with him, and we were in the dinner ride till the evening, and there's no lights in the huts. The light had gone, and somebody spoke to me next door, and then somebody said, "I know that voice." It was old Ernie. Yeah, I know that voice. And that was it. We got together, went around various hostelries when we could get away, and had a good old chat about what happened there. And that was it. I was there for a fortnight.
What was your reaction to being called up again?
I was disgusted. Yeah. Absolutely disgusted. Because whilst I was paid by the army, paid me the rate, going rate, the only ever stopped it from my salary. People that undertake military service, they deducted it from my salary for that month. I thought it was absolutely revolting. I did, honestly. And I said, well, I didn't undertake it. I wrote to the sales director, old Red Smith. I said, look, Mr. Smith, I did not undertake. I was summoned, and I couldn't refuse. Made no difference.
So that was just a bad experience all round.
That was a bit of a shocker, yeah.
I mean, were you in danger of being sent to Korea?
No. No, I don't know. I think I was getting on a bit then, I think, wasn't I? I know it was when I was still with Unilever, and I was with Unilever until 1960, what was it, 66. 15, I'd done 15 years with Lever. And I joined them in 1950. Yeah, yeah. I was with them till 1966. Yeah. So it must have been in the 60s. In the 60s, career time. Yeah. No, I wasn't called back for Korea. No, no.
Right. Okay. Right. That's Norman Mitchell. End of reel 7.